Keys, Installment 2, Leaving Government School. Critical thinking question. Today is Monday. Who would you like to be in charge of your life this week? I'm sorry, maybe that's just a stupid question. Welcome to the second installment in a series of shows dedicated to presenting alternatives and solutions to the problem of government education. I am very excited today to have a chance to speak with the first listener to School Sucks podcast who has actually gone through the process of taking himself out of government school. He is a 14-year-old named Jack. He lives in Connecticut, and when he withdrew from his public school a month ago, he was in the eighth grade. I think it's also worth pointing out that I'm pretty sure that the actual show, School Sucks Podcast, didn't factor in too heavily into his decision to do this. I think he was well on his way down that path before he even discovered this show. And that being said, I also think that it's worth mentioning once again that I'm not encouraging anybody to do anything. I'm just trying to put some information out there. You do have alternatives, you do have options, and then hopefully, the only thing that I encourage anyone to do is to listen to what's on this show with an open mind and then make their own decision about what's best for them. This is a show about an alternative that Jack has discovered and Jack is now pursuing, which is unschooling, something that we, of course, are going to talk about in greater detail in the future, probably in the very next installment of this Keys series. But, taking charge of your own education might not be for everybody. I mean, when we're in high school, or maybe it doesn't seem like it's for you right now. When we are in high school, our primary focus is getting into college. And I think a lot of people are hesitant about the idea of leaving school, where the whole point of being there for 12 years, or especially the last 4 years, is to get this sort of fancy-looking lottery ticket that gives you a chance at getting into another four-year institution. So, like, if you're trying to go to a place where for 4 years you'll basically sit still in a desk and absorb the opinions of some authority and then repeat the opinions of that authority back to the authority on, you know, some kind of writing activity, then yeah, it might be helpful to have like a piece of paper that says, oh yeah, Danny proved for 12 years that he was very good at sitting still and absorbing information from an authority and then repeating information back to that authority with some kind of writing activity. And, you know, if those entire 16 years go well, then somebody might actually pay you to sit still and follow their directions. And of course, I should point out that I'm not saying that college is useless or pointless. I mean, it is a spectacular waste of money for what most people get out of it. But some people need higher education. Some people have very specific things that they want to do, being a doctor, working maybe in the software field or some kind of engineering field where you need that degree and you probably actually benefit from that education. So certainly what we're talking about here is not for everybody. It's more important to realize what has happened to you through this 12-year process of government education. I think it's much more important to realize the effect that it has on you. Really, I think the most dangerous thing that any young person can do is continue to go to government school without any kind of awareness about the reasons why that school is really there, and without any kind of awareness about why they are forced to be there every day. I think that's very dangerous. So I'm not knocking college, and maybe I'm speaking from my own experience where I wasted about $60,000 to get a communications degree, which is like one notch above a liberal arts degree on the uselessness scale. And, you know, I really just kind of caved under the pressure that was what you were supposed to do after high school. Like, college is 13th grade. But if you go to college, you know, if you invest all that time and money with no purpose, I really don't think it's a good idea. I mean, all you get is, if you go to college with no purpose, with no career goal, with no kind of training that you want in mind, what you have at the end of 4 or 5 or, you know, 6 years, if you really kind of take your time while you're there, is a piece of paper that basically, you know, says to an employer, "Hey, look what I did." I'm serious. I'm thinking about gluing some macaroni on mine. I say this from experience because, you know, I know a little bit about education. I went through this myself, not just 4-year undergrad, but also a significant amount of graduate school. I've worked as a recruiter, a technical recruiter, so I've you know, rifled through thousands and thousands of resumes, and I've helped people write their resumes as part of a educational consulting. So I really just see this in too many cases as being a pointless waste of money. But that's the only purpose of high school, is to go to these places. Now, everybody's different. You know, obviously there's a myriad of options that are available to people. And so I just want to make people aware of what this brave young man has done. And if you have any questions for me, if you have any questions for him, please contact me. If you have questions specifically for Jack, I can kind of be an intermediary there, and I'd be happy to facilitate conversations in the future with Jack or with other students who have made this decision. Also, probably worth mentioning on a quick technical note, I am still at the very end of the moving process from the seacoast to Manchester, New Hampshire. When I recorded this a few days back, a lot of the things that I use were still in boxes somewhere, including microphones. So this interview is a little rough. Jack is on Skype on a phone line in Connecticut, and I am talking to him on a $10 Dynex microphone. It's actually the microphone that I recorded the very first 2 original episodes of the show with. But that being said, a gentleman named Joe Christie has volunteered his services to go back and clean up all of the old audio. And if you had been paying attention to the podcast feed in the last week, you might have noticed that all of the past shows appeared with new code in duplicates. And I've gone back and removed all those, and I'm kind of replacing the old slots with the new shows that Joe worked on. I think he made a very big difference, and I really appreciate him taking the time to do that and probably be working on this one. And also, of course, thank you to everybody who became a regular contributor to School Sucks podcast over the past week or so. That is greatly appreciated, and I will certainly throw your names in an upcoming episode of the show, unless you don't want me to, let me know. Thanks to Jason Osborne, of course, who continuously supports the show, not only with money to keep it going, but also for some advertising to raise awareness about what we are doing. And we will be back to continue with our history series, hopefully within the next week. And in the meantime, I hope you enjoyed this interview with Jack. I look forward to your feedback, and take care.
My guest today is Jackie, is a 14-year-old. Were you an 8th grader, Jack?
Yeah.
When you left, former 8th grader who has taken himself out of public education, and today we are going to talk about what has transpired in the last month and what led up to him making that decision. So, Jack, how are you doing?
Good, thanks.
good. And where does your story start? I mean, I guess because you are relatively young, one thing that I would be interested in learning a little bit about is how you started to come to these realizations about what was going on with your public education.
Well, I guess I never really liked school all that much, but you know, I've been into the libertarian kind of ideas. I started to think about, you know, what the control aspects of school are, and the formalities, and how it's really a control center. And some of the ideas that they're spouting out to you aren't really true, and it's a lot of propaganda. So I started to see through that, and then I knew unschoolers and homeschoolers, and I really wanted to be a lot more like them. And I got educated on my own time. I started reading John Taylor Gatto and things like that. So that's how I got introduced to it, I guess.
So you kind of, this was really something that you discovered on your own, combined with having some interactions with people who were homeschooled. Is that fair to say?
Yeah.
And when did you decide to sort of personally take action? When did you decide to actually start trying to, at the very least, investigate what your options would be if you didn't want to continue going to government school?
Probably I started around the end of the seventh grade. I started starting to talk about it, and nothing really happened. I mean, I kept campaigning and I kept trying. And, you know, not much. It took a very long time. It took up until February. So, you know, almost a year.
What were you doing during that time? I mean, what was happening in school, or what were you trying to make happen for yourself in school once you started to realize these things?
Well, in school, if you want to talk a little bit about my experiences in school, I had a hard time with some of my teachers. I think the way that I got out of the school is probably more through my parents.
What did your parents do? How did they become involved, or what was their role?
Well, their involvement was really the legal aspect of actually taking me out of the school. It took a lot of convincing and things like that, and they could see that I was really unhappy with the schools So they really played a large role in it. I mean, I talking to the counselor or the principal is not going to get me out of the school, because if they work at the school, they want me to be at the school. So it's really, you have to go outside the system to do it.
Yeah, and of course too. I mean, I don't have to tell you that the label that they've ascribed to people who want to get out of government schooling is dropout, which obviously has a very negative connotation, and there's plenty of anti-dropout propaganda that goes on as well. Of course, we could talk about how we, over, you know, the last several decades, or really the last century, young people were just expected to spend more and more and more of their time in formal education. But it seems like the realization that you were coming to was that you weren't really getting anything out of it. And how difficult was this process for your parents once they decided that they wanted to go through with this and give you this important hand helping you get out of school?
Well, so it wasn't very hard to get me out of school. There was red tape, you know, paperwork to go through. However, there is a lot of things that you have to do to continue it. You have to have a meeting with the state or the local town about what you're learning, and you need to keep documentation of what you're learning. So there is that element of it. So there's a lot to continue it, not so much to get out.
Have you had any discussion with your parents about what the paperwork is going to be, what the plan is going to be, or are they kind of willing to put you in charge of your own education? Or, I mean, what has been the follow-up discussion to these obligations that you're obviously going to have because of the local school district?
Well, you know, I'm the kind of person who would say, you know, fight City Hall, don't do it, you know. However, the kind of unschooling that I'm doing is mostly free for me. I can learn about and do what I want. Mm-hmm. So we don't really mind too much having to write down having to write down things about what I'm doing, if it will save us from, you know, having the town of Vernon or the, you know, all over us, the everything like that.
Yeah.
So you do have to make some kind of compromise, unfortunately, because, you know, my education is important to me and my family. And even as much as we hate the red tape that we have to go to, we just want to continue it.
And is there any concern that, you know, if you are doing what you describe as unschooling, very sort of learner-directed, learner-controlled type of education, is there any concern that the authorities might determine that what you're doing is unacceptable? Or have you thought about how you would deal with that problem if it comes up? I mean, I don't know. I don't know exactly how that works, and I'm sure it's a little bit different from place to place. Certainly, if you want to educate your own child, or if a young person decides they want to educate themselves, surely there's paperwork, and surely you have to report to somebody who considers themselves an authority on your education. And believe me, I recognize how absurd all of that is. But any concern about, you know, bringing something back to them at the meeting time and having them deem it inappropriate?
I don't have much concern for it, because what they basically say is that you need to be doing these subjects, mm-hmm. but they don't say, they don't give you strict, like, you must be using this book, you must be learning about this subject in particular under this. So what I've been doing is doing things that I'm passionate about, which is building bikes. I love bicycles. And, I could say, well, this is, science. There's a science to building bikes. Or, you know, things that I'm reading, People's History of the United States, Howard Zinn, you know, you can say, well, that's history.
Oh,
so, you know, they leave it broad. So I think I'm not all that worried about it.
Yeah, I figured that was inevitable. There was actually, I did a story or put in an audio clip in a recent show about two parents who were arrested for failing to do this arbitrary paperwork while they were homeschooling their own students. So, yeah, I'm sure the threats are real of, even once you're out of the school, not kind of following along with what they demand of you. But I mean, now you've been doing this for a month, so can you tell me how it's going, how you feel about it, you know, your level of satisfaction with having this control over your education?
I like it a lot. It's really free. I really like things that I'm learning about. I like the freedom that I have. I don't have to ask to use the bathroom. I'm not told what time I get to eat. I'm not treated like a prisoner. Mm-hmm. There's not the terrible social aspect of it. It's really, I love it. Yeah, it's great.
If we compare a little bit, do like a comparison to what you were dealing with before. Yeah, you mentioned people tell you when to eat. They tell you where you can go. They don't really have to give you reasons why for anything they tell you you must do or anything that you cannot do. But what was your last month of school like? I know you had told me that at one point you had failed to stand up and recite the Pledge of Allegiance. Was that sort of like a last straw in the public schools for you? Or what was the story behind that?
Well, basically, what happened was, I had a homeroom teacher who would, I would never stand for the pledge and I would never recite it. And she got very upset with me, even sent me to the principal. And, she's like, well, why aren't you standing? It's our great flag. It's our country. And, I explained to her, I'm a sovereign individual. I don't believe in, you know, nationalism or anything like that. And, I just stated my rights. The Supreme Court case, the Connecticut state law, didn't believe me. I went to her higher ups. I got them. I showed them the law. So it was somewhat of a last straw for me. I already knew that it was really bad. I mean, it was just more proof on my part.
Mm-hmm. What was the response from when you took this to, like, I'm guessing the school administrators? What was their treatment of what you were doing?
They were not happy that I wasn't doing it. However, I stated the law in the Supreme Court case, and they couldn't say much else about it. So,
what about your peers? What was their response or reaction to? Well, first of all, how long had you been doing this? Like not standing for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I'd been doing it. I mean, it was with that teacher. I had been doing it for about, you know, a month or so. I've done it my whole life, but I guess she either didn't notice it or she was fed up with it. But about my peers, not many people really cared. I mean, there's a few people who said, well, don't you think a country under God should be pledged to? And I said, well, no, I don't believe in God, and I don't believe in pledging myself to a country, and you know, things like that. But there wasn't too much of a negative reaction from my peers.
That was what somebody is, don't you think a country under God should be pledged to? Was it?
Yeah.
Wow. And where were you going to school?
I was going to a public school in my town, in Vernon, Connecticut.
Vernon, Connecticut, that's right. But you felt like generally most of your peers were somewhat indifferent to what you were doing with respect to not standing for the pledge.
Most of them really didn't care. I mean, I have friends who are atheists, and they were really, like, psyched about it. And they're like, wow, I wish I could do that, too. So, you know, some people might consider it, you know, my first act of civil disobedience, whatever. But, you know, not too much negative reaction from my peers, mostly from teachers and, you know, officials and whatever.
Right, right. I'm just kind of curious, not that it's really important, but the response of other people in your class to you leaving school entirely.
I think people knew that I was kind of out of the league, you know, out of the school's league, I guess. They knew I was, you know, somewhat smarter, not trying to boast myself here, and a lot of them weren't too surprised. I mean, I just didn't really talk about it all that much. If someone asked, I'd say, yeah, I'm not coming back to the school. That's it. Like, you know, not saying too much about it. I think my friends, they were kind of glad. They were happy for me. Because they kind of feel the same way, that it's a prison and people, you know, have false authority over you and things like that. You're not learning anything you genuinely want to know. So, yeah.
Well, that's, and do you still stay in touch with anybody that you were going to school with?
Yeah, I'm pretty involved in music, and I practice music with some people who still go to the school, and you know it's still fine. So.
And have they asked you any questions about, you know, what are you doing now? How's that going? Is it better? Any discussion about what you've done?
Yeah, there's been discussion. You know, how do I like it? Is it any better? And you know. I tell them it has, and it's great, and I'm loving it. And, you know, it's been a good reaction, for most people. I mean, a lot of people are unfamiliar with what unschooling is and how homeschooling really works. But once they get educated about it, then they can really, understand.
Right, right. And of course, you're absolutely right. Most people have no idea what it is. And I think that a lot of people, maybe especially public school teachers or public school apologists, if they ran across this discussion between you and I think they would see it as absolutely awful on my part to be supportive and even encouraging of what you're doing. They might say something like, well, this is a 14-year-old child who certainly doesn't know what's good for him educationally. There's no way he could he has the ability to decide what he should be learning in school. And I think that that's a pretty common attitude, which is why I was interested in initially response from parents, response from neighbors, response from peers, response from people in the school, because most people believe that public education is a positive and helpful thing. I have talked to people about unschooling before, and they were very dismissive of it as a foolish idea to put a young person in charge of their own education. Certainly, you know, if people don't have certifications in education, they just wouldn't know what to do. It seems actually that the opposite is true when you look a little closer, that the people who do have those permission slips to go into the school and call themselves teachers are really kind of at a loss as far as like how to deal with students, how to help students. And I don't think it's like they're incompetent people or they're bad people. It's just a system that kind of sets young people up for failure, and they really just don't know what to do. Did you have any positive experiences with teachers while you were in school?
Unfortunately, I can't say I did. I clashed with most of my teachers because a lot of people, what it comes down to, the general consensus is, I know what's best for you. Mm-hmm. And you see that all throughout, authority and everywhere. People think they know what's best for other people. I think that's a major problem that we have. And I think when people, you give them a title of authority, that just makes it even worse. That makes it, people think, well, I know what's best for you. I'm entitled. I have a license. Like, you are just a kid. I've had in the past some good teachers, but who are a little more understanding of their kid, of their students. However, not very recently. I'm glad I'm out of the school, and I'm glad I'm teaching myself. Because I think really that people, when it comes down to it, are the best teachers of themselves.
Yeah, absolutely. I really believe that, people don't need to, even young people really don't need to be told what to learn or how to learn. And they want to learn, and they should really be in charge of that process. I think when we're all very young, before we even go to school, the road is kind of paved for us just naturally to be that way. And then school is a process where we lose that curiosity and where we lose that sort of individual pursuit of wanting to educate ourselves, wanting to get more involved in the things that are interesting to us. And most of the people that I meet who are 16 or 17 years old, unfortunately, and I don't mean to generalize, but I really find it to be true, they're interested in nothing. I've asked a lot of students just for different types of tutoring that I've done, what's something that you think you know more about than other people? What are you interested in? What are you good at? And they really have trouble answering those questions. It's something that is very, very much sucked out of us as we go through the process of public education. So I really think that your story is great, because I think high school is the freshman through senior year is the last four nails in that coffin of curiosity, and you get to skip it entirely. So I think that's great.
Like you were saying, it kills curiosity, and while people don't really want to read, they don't want to read books, and it's because of the crap that they're trying to make you read in school. And I never really, read the things that I was assigned to read, like this year, the past year, when they were wanting us to read very simple books that I could have read in fourth grade. I was reading Rand and George Orwell while they were reading books about baseball. And when you talk to kids, they don't want, I know this because I interact with them, they don't want to read. They don't like reading. They'd rather watch TV or play Halo or whatever, because I think schools kill imagination, and they kill, the want to read or learn. So, resisting the public schools and what they're trying to give you is probably one of the best things you can do for yourself.
I agree, and I have to talk to a lot of, 16 and 17-year-olds about reading and about how to be an active, interested reader and the benefits of doing that. And, the consensus that as I've had conversations with juniors and seniors in high school about their feelings about reading, this wonderful process of discovery when we're younger, really just becomes an obstacle to getting something done because of the way it is treated in school. Like, every reading assignment that you get is like, read this, answer these questions. Well, answering the questions is proof that you did the assignment. So the reading just kind of becomes the obstacle in the way of doing the thing you need to do to be done with the assignment. And because of that, a lot of people form, it's not everybody, but a lot of people form a very negative attitude about reading books in general. And also, you know, I mean, that's a more specific example. If you think about the larger picture of school, people are told when they go to school from their teachers, from their parents, from, you know, school officials, that this is what education is. This is what learning is, this boring, mundane, repetitive, soul-sucking process is what education actually is. So imagine the resistance that develops on the part of most people to education. It so explains why they'd rather sit there in a passive state watching television, or in a semi-passive state playing GTA or Halo or something like that, because they're attitude about education, which is formed in public school, is obviously one of resistance. When they see how boring it is, when they know how pointless it is. So I think that that's a, you know, that 1-2 punch right there stops people from not only reading, but from wanting to learn anything in any way. I find sometimes that it's very difficult to engage adults in meaningful conversations because they would rather talk about the weather and the Red Sox. And, you know, I'm interested in the weather and the Red Sox, but it's not like, you know, the central focus of every time adults are interacting politely with each other. It's okay to talk about things that are interesting. It's okay to talk about things that are important. But yeah, I think, you know, obviously we are like 16, 17 years apart in life, but I think you're describing the seeds of the reality that I see in high school students and adults, that this enthusiasm about learning and reading and all this stuff is just sucked right out of people.
Right.
So let me ask you this question. This might seem like kind of a strange question. You, you're clearly a extremely bright young man, Jack. What were your grades like in school?
Terrible, actually.
That's so strange.
Well, okay, right, because my parents, you know, they would see my English class, right? I was getting D's, and they would say, "Jack, your face is always glued to a book. You know, how are you getting such bad grades?" I would say, "Well, because most of that class is looking up definitions, writing them down, having a test on them, or reading a book I don't want to read and answering questions I don't want to answer."
I think it's so interesting because there's all this emphasis that's placed on grades, especially in my line of work. Like, I come to work with so many students because their parents are concerned that they're not getting an education, and they're probably not getting an education from school, but that there's something that they are like seriously deficient somehow because they're getting C's and D's and maybe even F's. And sometimes, Jack, I've gone in to tutor students because their parents were panicked over a B where it should have been an A. But I think it's interesting that when anybody listens to you talk for 15 or 20 minutes, they realize that you're extremely bright. And for you to say that, you know, even though in school you found the work to be incredibly easy, that there was no challenge, the lack of challenge probably diminished your interest or helped diminish your interest in what was going on there. To learn that somebody who is bright and who is interested in learning and who is definitely curious about new things is not performing well in this scale of five letters that a stranger assigns to your intellectual ability. So I always talk to people about how grades are really not the important thing. I was guessing that your grades were probably not that good because you were bored. And I think that that's very common. I think the number one thing that makes people's grades low is boredom.
Yeah, and people have this association between good grades and intelligence. And, you know, if you ever try, you know, when I've ever tried to engage someone in a conversation who people consider smart because they have good grades, they have no idea what I'm talking about, and they'd rather talk about, "So did you watch American Idol last night?" Like, you know, and you can't have an intellectual conversation with these people, yet they're being boasted as the geniuses, the honor students. It's ridiculous. That's the only way I can describe it.
Yeah, and I think that you would find a lot of adult interactions to be very similar, as I said before. I actually had a really good conversation with a handful of people last night about the schools and about some, you know, social, economic, and political issues. But these are conversations that most people consider to be taboo. You're not supposed to talk about politics or religion or these kinds of important issues in polite company as adults, because it's controversial and people attach all these emotions to them and people get upset. And it's so much easier to sit there and talk about nothing, to put up these sort of empty balloons of conversation that kind of bump into each other, and that passes off as like a meaningful social interaction. And of course, that's not how it is everywhere. I mean, I have some friends that we have great conversations about things that I think are important, and we butt heads and we disagree and we challenge each other. And so, I mean, it's not like universal, obviously, but certainly what you're describing, as far as the kind of interactions you have with your peers, yeah, it's exactly the same in the adult world. That resistance to enlightenment doesn't really fade as people get older. And in fact, sometimes that resistance to enlightenment increases as people get older, because they become very, very comfortable with their belief systems, and they don't like it when somebody wants to challenge it. Have you, as a young man, run into anything like that with adults?
As people who don't want to challenge the idea of school?
The people who don't want their belief systems challenged, whether their belief system is that school is good or that you should be obedient.
Right. I think it's in our culture, a lot of it. I mean, it's, like you said, it's not everyone. However, I think I would say that, you know, people like my parents, or people who go to their church, and people who run their circles are very leftist. I wouldn't describe myself as a leftist or, you know, someone on the right. I have a very different set of political views. However, they don't want to, you know, whenever I talk about something about, Obama and, like, say, Somalia or Afghanistan or the war, and how, you know, Obama's just extending Bush's policy. They don't want to hear it because they think he's such a great guy. And I think, and you know, when he won the Peace Prize, my mom was like, "Wow, isn't this great?" And I said, "Well, you know, he ordered more troops into Afghanistan. How is that peace? War isn't peace." And they're just like, "Well, I don't want to hear it. I love him. I don't want to hear it." And so, I think that is something that is. And it is in our culture.
Yeah, absolutely. Boy, that sounds like a lot of conversations that I've had with people about Obama. But it really is. It really is actually the same thing. It is resistance to new information. Like, even if people seem like they care about politics, or they seem like they, oh, I'm very interested in geopolitical or economic issues, when you start presenting ideas that challenge their beliefs, which really, you know, a curious and intelligent person should say, "Oh, I want to hear more about what you're saying, because from what I can tell so far, I'm going to disagree with you. So I'd like to have that conversation." Like, I find that I would almost have to chase somebody to tell them about what my beliefs are. Like, if I hear somebody saying something that I disagree with, or I think is wrong, or I think really isn't based on anything solid, I want to engage that person. I want to have a conversation with that person. They often seem like they want to run away from me or change the subject. Well, how about them Red Sox? Well, what about this weather? I find that's very common, because I'm thinking your parents are probably younger than my parents, but it's very much the same thing. I have those kinds of conversations a lot. So yeah, I think that's interesting. But have you started to kind of pull back a little bit as far as engaging them in that type of dialogue?
Well, I'm a strong believer in the idea that if you do the same thing over and over again and expect something different, you're insane.
Right.
You know what? Sometimes I believe it's a lost cause. Sometimes I'll engage them in something if I know that they'll talk to me about it. The other night I had a pretty good discussion with them about, clean coal. I was talking about how it's not really clean. And, you know, they were interested and they wanted to hear more about it. because they didn't really have too much an opinion on it. But I think maybe when they do have an opinion on it, I can, and I understand their opinion, and I know they're probably not going to change their mind, I can, you know, I'm a little less motivated to talk to them about it. That's people in general. Yeah, there is something to be said, though, about convincing people of your point of view. But, you know, right now, it's maybe not the best thing to do if I know it's going to start conflict with between us.
Yeah, I think that you know, a lot of times you kind of feel like some of your relationships are based on avoiding certain subjects, that the appearance of having a solid or a meaningful relationship with somebody is sort of contingent upon not talking about certain things. And I don't really feel that way with my family. I've never been afraid to confront them about one of these issues. And, you know, I don't think that people should be. I think it's more sort of casual relationships with other people that are maybe a little bit more shallow, where this is more common, where that entire relationship is kind of based on the unspoken agreement that you won't talk about certain things. Do you know what I mean? And I think that at times I am resistant to talk to people in my own family about these things, just because I do feel like it is kind of, you know, running into a brick wall. I mean, I guess it's different for everybody. I continue to do it, and I think it's important to engage and really to challenge and really to question people who have these sort of inconsistent and irrational status beliefs. And sometimes I think that maybe not doing the same thing over and over again is a good approach, but persistence and, you know, going kind of evaluating the discussions that you have with people and going back and saying, oh, what could I have done differently? What could I have said? What could I have said differently? I mean, there's a lot of effort that is being put towards figuring out ways to convince people about the violence and the irrationality of much of what goes on with government. You know, there's, and a lot of people have thought of some pretty creative approaches, and people are still always working on that. But I guess, you know, all of this, Jack, is leading up to what I think is probably my most important question of all, and a question that, you know, I hope other young people will listen to your answer carefully. How did you convince these people, your parents? I mean, what was that process like? How did you convince them to let you, or to help you, maybe more appropriately, leave public school?
It's not as cut and dry as, I wish it was. My parents aren't as convinced to liberty or unschooling as I am. However, I am out of school, so there's something to be said for that. But they were more upset at the fact that I was not happy. My teachers were not being very nice to me, that I wasn't learning anything. And that's what it came down to. I've had hundreds of conversations with them about homeschooling and unschooling. And I think, like you said, there are some really great arguments that people have come up with. There's a few good books, you know, for teenagers or people, you know, my age. One's called The Teenage Liberation Handbook, which presents a lot of step-by-step, you know, how to convince your parents to let you get out of school, and almost everything that has to do with unschooling. I wrote papers for them, just some ideas. I wrote papers for them. I engaged them in different kind of things. I gave them books. And you can abuse some of your power, because they are your parents and they're going to listen to you. Mm-hmm. And they're not going to just shrug you off. So I think that's really important. And, you know, just showing them how unhappy you are, because I don't think there are many parents out there who like to see their children unhappy. And I think they have to, if your parents are open-minded and, you know, you can get them to challenge the status quo, I think you're on the right path.
Right. And I think maybe in a lot of cases it's more parents don't want to see themselves as being the cause of the child's unhappiness. Or if they see a place where they can intervene, they want to feel as if they did something to help their child be happier. So, yeah, and I mean, I think it's more, it's not like abusing your power as their child. I think it was persistence. I mean, I think you showed them how committed you were to like, not only do I have an alternative, but this is my level of commitment to that alternative. Here are my arguments. I wrote this. Here's a book that somebody else wrote. I just want you to read at it. I just want you to look at it. I just want you to talk to me about this for, you know, a little while. I think that shows something. And obviously it would be different for everybody with, you know, their parents. And I think that some people, and I don't know if this happened with your folks at all, but, some parents might just be concerned, like, well, what will people think of me if I take my my son or daughter out of school and let them educate themselves? Because I think that's kind of conformity to social norms is something that a lot of people are very concerned with. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, it has to do with every family. Every family's different, obviously. Mm-hmm. So, I really think it's different for each family. I mean, we know homeschoolers. We have close family friends who are unschoolers. And, so I think that was definitely a kind of helping thing. I think that if your parents' friends aren't open to the idea of homeschooling, then, well, maybe your parents should, you know, talk to them about it. Try and change some minds about it. Be honest about it. I think it's unfortunate that, you know, we have to deal with this cultural, social, obedience to the public schools and the government at large. But, it doesn't mean you should give up, and it doesn't mean that you should, just say, well, you know what? Most people aren't going to agree with homeschooling, so we should just give up. But that's not going to do anything, you know, very good for you, and it's not going to do anything for the cause of homeschooling, at large. Because the movement is growing, I think.
So, yeah, I absolutely agree with you, and I think those are excellent points. And I don't want to make it sound like people who hold these status beliefs or these conformist beliefs or these, this kind of obedient mindset, that these people are somehow mentally deficient. Your parents, my family, the most of the people that I know that would be very critical of the choice that you've made. It's just that for the most part, most people have never been presented with these ideas. They were educated in this one size fits all system where, you know, apathy, obedience, and conformity are really the three most consistent messages that run through that 12-year process. They get very comfortable with a belief system because of that, and they really don't want to do the sort of intellectual or the investigative footwork that's required to find out if those beliefs really have validity to them. So I mean, it really, I think that what we've talked about shows the importance of being persistent and showing the people that care about us or that we care about, that we have a commitment to this philosophy or we have a commitment to these ideas. And I think a lot of parents are used to kids like coming up to them and saying, I want to do this, right? I want, yeah, I mean, like, I remember when I was a little bit younger than you, Jack, going up to my parents and being like, Mom, Dad, I've decided that what I really, really need in life is a pogo stick. Do you know what a pogo stick is?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't know if I was dating myself. And then going up to them like 3 months later and saying like, wait a minute, I was wrong. What I really need is a pogo ball. That was just kind of a silly example, but parents are so used to seeing their kids' interests change so fast that, if we're not persistent with not just our parents, but with the older generation in general about this philosophy, about our beliefs and about alternatives to what so many people consider, acceptable or even preferable, it's really hard for them to take that seriously. I think that's most true with our parents, who are so used to seeing their sons' or daughters' interests change so dramatically through the course of growing up. But this is really an idea. This is a philosophy. This is an interest that has a sort of sticking or staying power unlike anything else. Like, once you see this stuff, you cannot unsee it. And I think
it's the red pill. Right?
Yeah, exactly. You cannot go back. And I think that part of that too, for the people that we're trying to convince, is subtly or maybe even subconsciously, they know that. They know if they see it, they won't be able to go back. Their comfort
zone, it's like Cypher from the Matrix.
Yeah, their comfort zone will be annihilated if they follow you where you're trying to take them, right? And yeah, of course, the Matrix reference is very suitable here. It's actually quite ideal here. So, but I think that's really what's important, and that's my recommendation. If people decide that they want to go down this path, and I'm sure there's maybe some social risks involved in doing this, but I really think it is the best shot for young people to get a real education. There really is no argument that a 14 or 15 year old, when it comes to what they want to learn and what they want to do, just is incapable of having any idea what's good for them. I think that's incredibly foolish. 90 years ago, if you were 15 years old and you didn't have a job, or you hadn't started a family, you would kind of like miss the boat as far as society was concerned. So the idea now that somebody is an adult when they graduate from college at like 23 years old is just foolish. I think we've seen young people kept young people longer and longer and longer by this public education process. So I think that's something that also needs to be explained to people who think that a 14-year-old is just not capable of making these kinds of decisions.
Right.
The other thing that I wanted to ask you is, like, I remember being in school or even being somewhat out of school. And I'm sure you're aware of this sort of stigma that surrounds homeschooling in general. Kids who are homeschooled are weird, and they don't have good social skills, and they don't have to interact with other people. So if somebody was, one part curious about what you were doing, but that sort of inevitable one part critical of what you were doing. So they're kind of approaching you with some questions, but with a lot of skepticism and with this preconceived idea that you're some kind of weirdo for doing this. I mean, what would you tell a peer, or maybe even somebody who was a couple years older than you, about the benefits of what you've done?
Well, I would explain to them, first I explained to them what unschooling was. Then I would, start to tell them about what I'm learning and what they're not learning, and how flawed the system that they're in it is. And there is this idea that homeschoolers are weird, but and I've never been someone who follows the status quo to begin with. I have a ponytail. I subscribe to a very different political views. So it's really you do have to get past some of these social boundaries, but I think once you do, then people start to warm up to the idea.
Yeah, absolutely. I think another thing that's worth pointing out is you said that you might tell them about what you're learning that they're not learning. I think just as importantly, maybe even more importantly, you can tell them about what they're learning that you're not learning. Right?
Right.
All of those really negative and destructive messages of public education that exist really from the time that we're very, very young in elementary school right up to the time that we graduate. All of those messages are something that you've escaped from at this point. And you don't have to go through. I mean, a lot of it's very subtle, but it's subtle and incredibly repetitious, right? I never, like, if you ask somebody for like a real substantive criticism about homeschooling, I mean, the only thing that they could really say is that they miss out on all of that wonderful socialization of school, right? That packing 1,000 people unwillingly into a concrete building and making them interact with each other all day is some kind of a positive thing, right? Which is why everybody is so, you know, polite and well-mannered in prison, where the same exact thing happens, right? 1,000 or so people packed into a building and forced to interact with each other. So, I mean, the idea that school is socialization is a pretty demented idea on its own. But, I mean, what else could they really be critical of? That you wouldn't know what, like, if somebody who was homeschooled from 5 years old up until the time that they, you know, went to college or went to the next step in their life, which certainly doesn't have to be college, they wouldn't know what to do when a bell rang. They wouldn't know how to, like, hide the aspects of their personality or their appearance that make them an individual to fit themselves into some kind of a clique. Like, I mean, what would you really not know how to do because you were homeschooled? It's an interesting question. And I mean, I think the answer is obvious. It's basically nothing. I mean, it's such better preparation for anything that follows, and especially for the not just for preparation, but also for preservation of, you know, curiosity and individualism and creativity. So, you know, I really, I commend you for what you're doing. And before we wrap up, I wanted to see if you would be interested. I have been trying for 7 months now, Jack, to get a public school teacher who will defend the public education system to come on my show. And I have struck out every single place that I have swung to try and find somebody to do this. If I could find a person, what I think would be fun and interesting would be to have you come back on the show. Maybe it'll be soon. Maybe it'll take, I mean, at this rate, it looks like it's going to take forever, but I'm convinced sooner or later I'll find somebody who will do this. Maybe having you come back on the show with them, and we could have a little bit of dialogue, maybe even kind of a debate. And I assure you that I don't think you have anything to be afraid of, as far as what kind of arguments they could throw at you. Is that something you would think about doing?
Absolutely.
I think that would be very cool. So, you know, in closing today, what else do you want to add? What else have I missed that you think is worth covering or worth talking about? And
I would just say my best advice to any kids who are listening, that to really challenge the status quo, challenge your teachers, challenge social norms. I had a teacher who once said to me, you know, Jack, why aren't you standing up? I mean, everyone else is. They're all saying the pledge. You're in this with them. And I said, you know, no, I'm not. I'm sovereign. I'm an individual. I challenge the status quo. I challenge social norms, because social norms are what are bringing down our country and bringing down, you know, the human race at large. So really,
what do you mean by that? Bringing down? I mean, certainly, you haven't said anything that I disagree with. But if somebody asks you to elaborate on that statement a little bit more, I mean, what would you? How are the social norms contributing to, you know, a lot of the problems that we face today?
Well, the social norm of obedience, the social norm of, you know, you should listen and do what people say. When I'm a strong believer in civil disobedience, just because someone calls themselves an authority, it doesn't mean they have power over you. They might try and exert violence over you. I think you should defend yourself as much as you can. I'm definitely a pacifist. And I think, you know, just because someone claims to be authority doesn't mean you should listen to them, and doesn't mean you should agree with them. And when someone tells you something, you should really look into it before you start agreeing with them.
Well, certainly the rules and routines of school are really nice training and preparation for the laws of society, which is basically this, you know, magical code that can't be questioned. And I think when you start talking to people about legal issues or the issue of civil disobedience, they start saying, well, it's the law. Don't you know the law? It's just the law. I mean, you follow the law. The only explanation that most people need for whether something is right or wrong is if it's legal or illegal. So you can really, really see how that obedience translates into the adult world, where the law almost becomes like a religion. So, I mean, the law is, of course, very effective as well for imposing new things and more things on innocent people. I mean, that's basically what it's used for. So, you know, I think you make a good point, and I think that part of the problem is that I talked with another student I talked to a public school student who had discovered the show maybe a couple of months ago. And one of the things that we agreed upon, and a lot of students that I've talked to have also expressed this as well, is that it's just too terrifying to try and separate yourself from the crowd or from the clique and say, you know what, this is who I am. I'm an individual. They just feel like that's too much of a liability. What would you say about that? Or what would you say against that?
I've definitely experienced that. People have said to me, you know, wow, I couldn't have stood up to a teacher like that, or things like that. And I think it takes a little bit of practice, and take a little steps too, if that's what you're worried about. And I would say, don't be afraid of, you know, the cliques or the people. You know what, you're not going to be the one who's doing anything wrong. I mean, I think a lot of people value their cliques. I mean, I was never all that popular, so I didn't have a huge problem with doing things like that, or standing up to people. But, I think it's a valuable skill to be able to stand up to people. And some people have a little more trouble with that, and that's nothing to be ashamed of. It just, I think it takes a little bit of time.
And I think we're starting to see, I mean, I feel like when I look out online or when I look at the people who have come to be fans of School Sucks podcast on Facebook or whatever, the conversations that I'm having with young people, I feel like more people may be starting to do that, or at the very least thinking about doing that, thinking about kind of trying to separate themselves and seeing the merit of that. So I really hope that continues. The only other comment I have about what you just said is a couple times in the past, people have been critical of me for being what they interpreted as being encouraging of civil disobedience for young people. And you know, all I would say to anybody who's listening, who has thought about this or is supportive of this, is, you know, it's a complex issue, and there are different points of view on whether civil disobedience is not just smart or kind of a self-honoring thing to do, but also how effective it is for advancing the cause of freedom or for helping people come to a better understanding of liberty. So there's plenty of resources that you can check out. I actually did a sort of roundtable discussion with another gentleman. I don't know if you're familiar with Stefan Molyneux.
I think I've heard the name before.
We're definitely worth checking out. I think you would find him to be an incredible resource. Wes Bertrand, who has been on my show in the past, he has his own podcast called Complete Liberty. Also, I strongly recommend it. And another woman who lived in New Hampshire named Lauren Canario. You could find this on YouTube, just searching Free Domain Civil Disobedience. It should come up with a panel of four people's heads. That would be the correct video, Free Domain Civil Disobedience, and I'll put a link to it in the show notes as well, where we talk about strategies for advancing the cause of freedom. And I do just always want to point that out, that there is a lot of differing opinions on the issue of civil disobedience. So if that's something that you'd be interested in checking out, I recommend it. But those names I mentioned, specifically Molyneux and Wes Bertrand, both have pretty elaborate bodies of work. Stefan Molyneux has he's approaching 1,600 podcasts, and you know, Wes has this Complete Liberty series that's about 100 shows, and they're both very good resources. So I recommend checking them out.
Thanks.
And you are aware of Free Talk Live.
I've called the show a few times. Yeah,
that was actually the first I heard of you. I was listening that night when you called. And I said, boy, I wish there was a way for people who are listening to find out, you know, at least contact information for people who call the show. Like, I wish they logged it, or there was a way that could be exchanged. But then you emailed me two or three days later, so that was awesome. And, you know, it certainly took us a while to coordinate a time to talk, but I'm glad we did. And I certainly will look forward to you coming back on the show in the future, Jack, to giving us an update on how things are going with you now that you are participating in unschooling. And if I can find a public school teacher who wants to come on this show, I will certainly invite you back to participate in that as well.
Okay, thanks.
Well, it's been a great pleasure to speak with you, and like I said, I look forward to doing it again.
Yeah, me too.
All right, Jack, take care.
You too.
Travels on somebody else's highway. Don't live your life for nobody else's goal. Do what you want. Oh, don't go on to my way. Don't listen to what you've always been told. Open up your mind. All the money that you got and how it burns a hole you want to spend. Oh, you got more than that. It's a wonderful destination. When